look into the orthodox doctrine concerning this karma. As we go on throughout this discussion, I hope in your mind something will be ticking. If all this is happening, how do I get involved in this? What is the me that links me with this, with all this? What is the me that links this consciousness with what goes on, either the expression or the experiences, all of which are based on the concept of materiality? Because action and expression are possible only on the material plane, not on the spiritual plane. If there is one alone, in the infinite there is neither expression nor experience. To the infinite itself, there is no other to be experienced. There is no other to communicate with. So this question must go on, because that's the one unanswerable question and unsolvable puzzle. Also, one must remember not to confuse issues. What applies to the purely spiritual plane does not apply to the physical plane. The rules are different. The fish and I, we are both living beings, and according to somebody, Darwin or Vyasa Maharshi, we were all fish once upon a time. While we were there, the rules were different. We had gills and you know, we breathed in a different method. The breathing system, the respiratory system, the respiratory apparatus was different. Now that we are landed animals, the rules are different again. So one should not confuse one with the other. Also, it is essential to understand that on the physical level, on what is known as the material dimension, there are a few inviolable laws. One is the law of compensation. I have a rather crude way of putting it. I hope you don't mind. You cannot build a house without digging your grave. Which I guess means a lot more than it does on the surface. You cannot build a house without digging your grave. All this material has come from the earth. And while you are scooping this earth, in order to get this material out of this earth, you are digging your grave too. You cannot pile up without digging down. You cannot build up without digging down. That's obvious. That is what science calls the law of conservation of matter, of energy. That nothing can ever be completely destroyed. Energy keeps changing its function. Static energy becoming kinetic energy, etc., etc., all that crap. And matter keeps changing its form, but it is never completely lost. So, in a manner of speaking, when you talk of the spiral becoming an individual, now you can somewhat understand. When the spiral builds up, there is a dramatic condensation in one point, and there is a sort of vacuum around, sort of vacuum, not complete vacuum. There is a thinning out of matter around the spiral. The same thing, the same matter still exists, the same quantity of matter still exists, but since there has been a condensation which has formed this, around that there is a field of subtlety, thinness. That's how probably the personalities were formed. And this, when this personality begins to act, it sends out impulses. And just like in the case of firing a rifle, there is a backfiring also at the same time. Where was it? I read somewhere that in a rifle range where they were training soldiers, they found that either in the lungs or in the bodies or the shirt of these trainees, they found lots and lots of gunpowder. But every time the man fired, something spilled on himself. It is not possible not to do it. You cannot perform any action whatsoever without leaving an impression of it in yourself, unless you are a yogi, karma yogi. We'll come to that later. Karma yoga is that mental trick, psychological trick or spiritual trick by which you prevent this from happening. That we shall discuss later. So normally, it is not possible to perform an action without the action leaving an impression behind, samskara, vasana. This word vasana is even more interesting because in common parlance, this word vasana is taken to denote the scent, S-C-E-N-T. You know, you handle some stuff, especially incense. It still smells incense. And you go to the bathroom, wash it with soap and so on. It still smells incense, plus soap. You see nothing at all, not a particle of the incense on your hands, not a particle of the soap or detergent on your hand, but still the scent is there. That is called vasana. Something, some subtle impression left, which doesn't want to go away. And whereas the scent that is left on your palm, on your fingertips, by handling incense sticks, is some kind of inert, insentient material substance, that which is beyond the me being consciousness, intelligence, an impression left on it craves for repetition, becomes operative. If you don't mind my being a bit rude, again, I've seen some people do this, sort of, you know, drunk, mad. When they see a lovely statue, they go and embrace it. I believe some devotees in India also used to do that. Jump around to that statue of Krishna and hug and kiss and so on. You hug a statue and kiss it. Oh, you feel delighted. We don't know if the statue feels delighted also. And you go away. I'm talking to the girls here. And that statue doesn't trail around you, trail behind you. But you kiss a little boy, that boy trails around you, behind you. Why? The boy is a sentient being, so he responds to this and craves for a repetition. Whereas the statue is not so sentient. It stands on its pedestal. Right? So when an impression is produced in consciousness, which has also energy, that itself acts later. It's one of those dangerous things to play with. And you know, there is often this theory that, you know, if you are angry or if you are excited or whatever it is, there is a theory that it must be worked out. It is not all worked out, one-way traffic. As it is working, it is leaving something behind also. So that impression is getting all the time deeper and deeper and deeper and more firmer, stronger. And with every repetition, it gains strength. It's not worked out, it's worked in. This is the danger of this thing called samskaras. Therefore, every action that leaves that the me right down to the senses perform sends out an impulse in what may be regarded as an external world from the purely material point of view. From the material point of view, I is different from you. Right. So an impulse is sent out and an impression is left behind. Both these together form this karma, sanchita. That is an action. The action has been done, and since the action has been performed, it has created an impulse which must return to it as reaction. Everything in the world is a boomerang because, as Professor Einstein is supposed to have said, that even the universe bends round and ends in a circle. So whatever goes out of you has to come back. You can see that in the lake, if you take a big rock and throw it into the lake, it immediately creates a trough. There is a build-up all around it. In a moment, the water flows into the trough to fill it up. It has to do it. That is nature. That's the nature of matter. So that you go on digging it, rain falls somewhere, and land is eroded. That hole is bound to be filled. That's going to happen in 50,000 years, it's not your concern. It's bound to happen. Is that right? See, it's a pure and simple law of material existence. And as long as this body shares with the rest of the universe the materiality of its existence, it is subject to the same laws. It is inescapable. The action that proceeds from here returns to this personality, to this spiral, tornado that keeps moving around, sending out impulses. This tornado, it's attracting the reaction to itself all the time. This is called karma. It's quite simple, it is. It's also called the law of retribution. That makes you fear. Yes? That makes you fear. And it is meant to evoke fear in you. It's a stick. It is meant to evoke fear in you. Why is it so? It is so. The people who invented this expression of retribution were like schoolmasters, and they had to do it. Whereas if you strip it of all this verbiage, you see that it is a mere and pure and simple law of balance. Law of compensation, the same thing. Balance. Nature is so nicely organized that it balances itself. Everything balances itself immediately. You cannot prevent nature from restoring the balance all the time, from moment to moment. That's what he saw the other day when he was standing on one leg, the edge of the chair. The whole system balances itself. Huh? And when he falls down from the edge of the chair, it is only in your eyes and my eyes that he is falling down. In the eyes of nature, it is still restoring the balance. When he is standing on the edge of the chair, would you like to demonstrate again, please? Only don't have to fall very seriously. more to the edge, otherwise... You see, it's still balancing. Yeah, right. Yeah, gently move forward, little bit. You can watch him. You can watch all that happens. Right. Even that is balancing. Mm-hmm. And when the roof is not there, the body, the intelligence in the body says it's not possible to balance like this. Come down. Huh? If you come down quickly, it doesn't matter how you come down. You may come down on your feet, you may come down on your nose, you may come down... come on, thank you. You may come down on your feet, you may come down on your nose or your head, it doesn't matter at all. But the balance is restored. That agitation, that imbalanced state is not possible for nature to tolerate. That's all. That's the law of karma, nothing more. You go on eating sweets from morning till night from the age of 2, and the system is saturated with the sugar. Then it develops diabetes. I mean, it's not a disease I am going to be frightened about. The intelligence in the body says enough of sugar. Huh? Right. It's the next verse. You have exhausted your quota for this. We'll see about it next time. That's all. A person goes on being vicious and hits everybody. And the law of karma says you will be paralyzed. It means nothing. You have abused your arm enough. Let it lie limp by your side. Don't lift it for the rest of this lifetime. We'll see about it next time. It's quite simple. If you get rid of the idea of retribution from your mind and look at it as a pure balancing act, that the divine intelligence in nature performs throughout the universe at all times, you deprive yourself, so to say, you sacrifice your pleasure, you sacrifice your wealth and your money and do charity. That comes back to you as pleasure, as prosperity or something else. The same thing, balancing. You go on giving it from this side, that comes back to you from the other side. And you go on accumulating, exploiting, accumulating, pushing towards yourself. there cannot be too much with you. So it falls down from the other side. Pure and simple balancing, and there is nothing more to it. So all pursuit of pleasure returns to you as pain. Exploitation, accumulation means digging your grave on the other side. It comes to you as adversity, poverty. The same thing. And don't forget the backfire. Pursuit of pain is supposed to lead to pleasure. I'll tell you a story in a minute. Let's first deal with the pursuit of pleasure. When I pursue pleasure, I want it more and more. I want more, I want more, I want more. Right? And the very coming to an end of the experience of pleasure leaves pain behind. As I am pursuing pleasure, I am running away from the pain, which is inevitable to life. So that itself causes pain. And pursuit of pain is supposed to cause pleasure. That is the idea of asceticism. That is the idea of asceticism and all this mortification and all this. You know, you go on hitting yourself. When you stop, you feel delighted. It's quite simple, as simple as that. Again, the balance. The body is writhing in agony. What are they called? Masochists. You go on inflicting agony on your body, and when it is finished, it's delightful. It was more delightful before. But it wasn't highlighted. Now that pleasure is highlighted. And that is called karma. Karma is simple balancing, compensation. I am giving it to you, the word retribution also. There may be a thing called retribution, I don't know. I can never reconcile myself to the belief, which is very widely held. So I'm giving it the orthodox point of view, that God punishes. I cannot. It seems to be too silly. Because if God is omnipresent, omnipotent, and omniscient, and all this, and then if God created all of us, and God sustains all of us, and God may do whatever He likes, am I so powerful that He must stand in front of me and start rolling up His sleeves? Yeah. That sort of thing, to me, is blasphemous. Even that is probably not true, probably. It's probably again restoring the balance, like a very devoted and fond mother giving a bitter medicine to her child, not out of hate, not out of retribution, but to cleanse the body of the poison that the child might have eaten. What is it that makes these operation of karma possible? It is obviously the me that somehow identifies this block of matter floating in consciousness that particle of consciousness which is made to feel, it does not really feel, that particle of that cell of consciousness, that jiva, that soul, is somehow made to feel that this body, this personality is mine, is me. That mysterious link, the me. It is that that makes the law of cause and effect operative. There are two ways of playing any game with a ball. You can throw a ball, it goes away. It's gone. When we were children, we used to be given, in cities, we used to be given a ball with a long rubber string attached to it. Have you ever seen this here? Huh? You tie that the end of the rubber string to your finger and then go on hitting it on the... Anywhere, you can hit the sky, the sun, the moon, everything can be hit. But the ball always came back to us. Why was it so? Because there was this rubber string attached to it. You can throw it with all your might and main, and the more vigorously you threw it out, the more vigorously it returned and hit you. As long as the string is attached to the ball, as long as the string links the ball with your finger, the ball will return to you. Once that string is snapped, the ball goes away. It's finished. It is the me that links this consciousness with all these, the other eight elements, the ego, the mind, the intelligence, and all this materiality. And as long as this link exists, there will also be reaction following each action. The action thus projected, the impulse thus sent out from the personality, apparently doesn't really leave you and go away. It's probably around you, circulating, forming what I called a computer the other day, forming the personality. There are numerous names given to it, the etheric double, all sorts of things. And also there is a beautiful concept in Indian religion, that is, that there is a small little god, fairly small, for you not even to feel his presence, sitting on your right shoulder, must always be right shoulder, I don't know why. And this is called Chitragupta. And he, sitting on your right shoulder, is observing all your actions in the sense of thought, word and deed. He is observing it. And when you die, he takes you straight up to the court of Yama. That word again is important, Yama. He is said to be the god presiding, the deity presiding over death. And there this Yama is seated in his royal throne, and you are in the dock, shivering in your shoes. You don't carry your shoes there. No mind. Probably you don't even have a body, your feet. Shivering. And Yama, the magistrate or the judge, looks at this Chitragupta and said, "Come on, how about his ledger? How about his accounts?" And this Chitragupta starts rattling out. He did some good and he did some evil. He did some good and he did some evil. These are the liabilities and these are the assets. These are all the nice things he did. These are all the vicious things he did. And this Chitragupta doesn't forget anything. If you look at the meaning, it's quite interesting. The meaning of the word Chitragupta, maybe name also. The meaning of the word is Chitra is picture, Gupta is hidden. A hidden picture of all your actions. Whatever you do is registered somewhere. Psychologists call this the unconscious. Chitragupta is called the unconscious. And I believe it is mentioned in one of the psalms. I forgot. God, you have... God keeps all the actions of all of us. It's a hidden picture or something. Something like that. Then the word yama is also important. Yama means restraint or restrainer, regulator, restraint, regulation, to regulate, to terminate, to restrain, to limit. All these are implied in the word yama. In other words, something built into the system which at a certain point in the course of its history says, enough. That's enough. That'll do. That'll do for the present. That which says, that'll do for the present in this body is called yama. Even so in Raja Yoga, one of the disciplines is also called yama. That is, it'll do. Don't let all these things run away with you. It'll do. Restrain yourself. Just a little bit.